Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Valhalla Movement podcast. Today, I've got a dear friend of mine who I haven't seen in a little while. I mean, last time I saw you was at a hockey game here in Montreal. We had a good old night in good old Montreal. But Garrett Atkins, basically one of my favorite humans on the planet, somebody who I've been working with for many years now. Welcome to the episode. Welcome back to the podcast.
Always a pleasure. Yeah. Always good to be back in Montreal, seeing the evolution of the studio, seeing the evolution of the podcast, hearing what you're up to and grabbing hockey games or Putin or just catching up. It's great. Absolutely. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So, tell me a little bit about your journey. I mean, I know you've been running a marketing agency, which we spent quite a bit of time, you know, developing over the years, the skills that it takes to learn a marketing agency. Right before we hit record, we were talking about little stories of how we purchased Instagram pages and Facebook pages and whatever it was to kind of meet different people. But I'm curious about what your journey has been like, because you kind of got an unconventional path. Like, you're a kid from West Virginia. I could call you a kid. You're a man at this point. But to me, you're a kid from West Virginia, at least when I met you. And West Virginia is not known for marketing work. I don't know that it's known for a lot of things related to anything online, really.
Not yet.
Exactly. But tell me a little bit about that. I mean, you were talking about a couple of things, but I'll ask about that after. But I'm just curious about, like, what's it like to run a marketing agency?
Yeah, where to start with it? I mean, I could jump right into where Impact Media is at today. Leaving West Virginia, came up to Montreal to work with you for a bit, and that's how we kicked things off and started a 5 or 6 year relationship of working together, building pages, selling pages, running events, traveling around, being in a lot of movement. Which phase of life that would be, but really just learning as much and acquiring as much knowledge as you can and meeting as many people as we really could, being on the forefront of it, from permaculture to video to marketing, which was great. And it was fun to move away from that environment and to see different aspects of the States, of Canada, down Latin America, and bring that back years later. So we gave it a good go. We learned a bunch. Grew a bunch, and as things shut down for a little bit, the world took a pause, started building Impact Media, which has been more of that rooted phase of my life where I'm traveling around less, building teams, scaling things, putting a flag to this brand. It's been an awesome journey. Like, there's a lot of growth, and I think it was very much needed, where for those 5-6 years, we were testing a lot, we were moving a lot, and I think it could have been easy to continue jumping around from place to place to place and constantly in like a process of learning or testing. But this has been a new edge for me to step into more of a leader, entrepreneurial business role, and a different entrepreneurial role. I mean, we were doing many solopreneur things from project to project, but to building something a bit more concrete that I have a leadership role in and managing day-to-day operations and dealing with different aspects that push me to learn and to grow, not only as an entrepreneur, but as an individual and as a human being, has been good. Like, it feels right. It's different, but it feels right.
Yeah. It's sometimes like more tedious. Mm-hmm. I can imagine, like, you know, as you know, the kind of the jet set lifestyle of like, oh, we're here, we're there, we're working with this person, this known thing and this known brand or whatever it was, has a lot of, like, there's a lot of excitement to it. But I will never forget this one thing you told me, which is you had made a decision pretty early on and us kind of knowing each other and working together, that you're like, oh, I'm just going to like dedicate, I'm going to work with this guy and I'm going to like really be involved in the learning phase for 3 years. And I think that you're one of the only people I've ever heard say that. Like, you're the only person I've ever met who like kind of understood the long game in a way that most entrepreneurs and most people, particularly when they're seeing that success and they're living that lifestyle, are like, oh, let me get more and more and more and more of it. And there's this kind of like glamour that we see on, like, I don't know, somebody watches, like, you know, Gary Vee when he was starting his vlogs or these different things. I think a lot of people, like, aspire to being this worldly human. Mm-hmm. But I think you always, in my opinion, you always had your feet firmly planted on the ground. Mm-hmm. As much as there was times where we were in the clouds and, you know, fuck me if I'm not the person who every once in a while was like down a rabbit hole or I'm like, okay, Garrett, I've got this new idea. We're going to change everything. Yep, yep, like yep. We're reinventing the whole entire thing that we're doing. I'm definitely more of a spontaneous person in that way. And it's kind of rare for me, who is somebody who likes to invest in the long-term game and focus a lot on building the business infrastructurally and at its core. You're the only person I've ever met who like immediately understood that. Mm. What do you think about you like gets that? Like, where did you learn that? Like, what made you realize like, oh, maybe I should like play the long game here?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly where it came from. And maybe it's like from a place of playing it. It's like a unique aspect of playing it safe, but also willing to lean into the uncomfort zone. Because I could be fully uncomfortable and mm-hmm. jump from thing to thing to thing to thing. Mm-hmm. But I was like, let me lean into this uncomfort of hanging out with Mark as well, because you were jumping around doing a lot of crazy stuff. So that was always pushing me in certain ways to evolve and grow in that way. But I don't know exactly what the main thing where I got that from. But it's interesting you brought that up when we were speaking about it before the podcast is... I was listening to an episode the other day of some show, and it's that if you record more than 10 episodes of a podcast, you're in like the 1 percentile. Mm-hmm. So, and I was actually thinking about this 3-year commitment that you were bringing up the other day. It came to mind a couple weeks ago, and I was like, how can I reinvest that into a different path? Or what am I currently doing with my business where I can take a risk for X amount of time and then have a clear end goal to look in and assess things in a clear way? And that's what I think. That's also maybe part of it as well, is I'm very analytically driven. I like concrete results. I like to make lists. I like to make goals. I like to, something isn't tangible if I can't write it down.
Yeah.
So setting those clear goals for me of 3 years and having that in mind made me feel a sense of like comfort and at ease that I could continue going down this rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. So I guess it was maybe even like a coping mechanism for myself to like really experience this aspect of life. And also, you know, respect that 3 years is a long time and 3 years is also a short time as well. So investing in something might be scary for 3 years, but if I'm investing 3 years in the greater scheme of things, mm-hmm. then that could set me on a trajectory that would change the rest of my life or, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you've always, in my mind, I'm more of like a fire starter, mm-hmm. but you're significantly better operator than I am. Like you're better at, I've gotten better at this now, but you are always better at being executionally on the ball, an operator, like just clearly understanding the pattern of success mm-hmm. and like meticulously doing it. Whereas I can like see that success, but then I get bored. I'm yeah. like, yeah, what if we like tweak it this way or that way? And I've always admired your dead set focus on doing those different things. Now, with that said, I do believe you have a nose for the future too. Mm-hmm. If you had to like build a brand from scratch today, mm-hmm. let's say you know, a dream client comes in, they're like, Garrett, we trust you, we get you. We love your team. We love everything you're doing. And you have to build a brand. I won't give you the parameters of what that brand is, but you had to build a brand today. What would you do? Like, mm-hmm. Where do you think the best place to tell stories is today? And what's the best strategy for telling stories today to scale your impact, to scale your business, to scale a team, to scale an idea?
Yeah. It really depends on the industry, but I would say that I'm big on iterations, testing, and just falling forward with it. So like if somebody's wanting to start something, the biggest obstacle is just that, just starting. Mm-hmm. So that's usually my biggest foot forward. If it's somebody who's new or maybe has a little bit of experience, I would say just like go, 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 go. If you do have a brand that's a bit more refined, you have more investment capital, you have more room for setting things up in a certain way or presentation, that's great to invest all that time and energy into building this super sleek brand and presentation and roll out into the world. Mm-hmm. But for somebody who is just starting, or you know, even somebody that's been working for 5-10 years, a lot of the times it's more so just start. And then find what is most interesting to you. I think video is the number one thing right now. Mm-hmm. It kind of sets you apart because the barrier to entry is super low, but also super high in the same degree that it's more accessible than ever. High. Yeah, it's more accessible than ever to start creating, but people just won't do it. Also, written, I think, is a big one as well. I think there's still a lot of room for, you know, LinkedIn posts, Twitter, I don't think people are going to blogs as much. So we get into the specifics of it, but all that to say is also what you're going to most consistently keep doing on a day-to-day basis. If you can commit to that 6 to 12 months of doing it every single day, that should be your parameter for it, first and foremost. And if you can keep that up, then you continue to evolve and build the habit. But for a smaller team, somebody starting, somebody who's in that 5 to 10 year, you know, part of their journey, it could be more than that. I would say is like find what you can actually continue to be consistent with, or manage somebody to be consistent for you, and constantly evolve with it. Or you're just not going to do anything at all, I think, is a simple fact.
That's fair. Yeah. Are you, what's your thoughts on AI? Are you concerned about it? Are you like in the camp that it's going to change everything? Are you in the camp that somehow maybe, I don't know, the production work you do or the storytelling work you do somehow is going to be completely changed, or that agencies won't exist anymore because everyone's going to be using AI? Like where do you fall on the spectrum of AI at the moment?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not super in the weeds of like the future of it. I do think it's going to change things. I think that there still is some time for it to work out some kinks, and also for the tipping point for that to take place. I still think we're a few years out of it, but a few years is pretty short as well. I think it's already making some impact. I don't think it'll certainly replace a lot of jobs still. But also I think what it's going to do, and what I'm kind of urging people to do, is to reinvest into traditional networking and meeting and in-person activities like you all do at the Valhalla Farms. Is like, you know, we can look at the shortest path online for creating Instagram content or showing up, putting a little video, and then walking away from your phone for a bit and want to, you know, retreat to some other room. But I think it's only going to make that in-person experience and true connection even more meaningful. So yes, it's good to invest the information. I think marketers, I think anybody should learn AI to some degree and at least have a pulse on it, but also know that genuine connection and networking should be just as much investment, if not more, to kind of curve that.
Love that answer. Yeah, to kind of curve, 'cause it's exactly the answer I would give to, which is like, I think the answer I would give is like, I do believe, like if I had to start a marketing agency today, and in a weird way with Leo here behind the scenes, I'm kind of getting back into it a little bit. I would focus on two things. How can I produce the highest quality video content as quickly, affordably, and as, and when I say quickly, how can I reduce the friction of production, and how can I go from hitting record to hitting publish as quickly as possible?
Yeah.
While still having the best possible content, the best possible stories, and the best possible like story formats, hooks, all that kind of stuff. But then the next thing I would say, and then I would integrate AI and all the, like, how can I use AI to grease that wheel as much as possible? But then, and while not going down the rabbit hole of AI being like AI generated content, like, oh, let me make one of those clip channels where I just steal a bunch of content and like do the, what I and you have seen has been the trend forever. Like there's always been Instagram pages, Facebook pages that they picked a particular niche and they just made like the lowest level content, scaled it to millions of followers. But we always understood that that audience wasn't nearly as worth, it was worth not nearly as much as somebody who had like a genuine following.
Yeah.
Who had built like a genuine audience. Like I'd rather have 1,000 true followers than a million.
1,000 true fans.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but I don't think most people get that. Right. Yeah. And then, so I would, if I had to build that agency, I would do that. But if I had to tell people where I think they should put their money, I would say you should zig against Zach. Mm-hmm. If everyone is going AI, what can you do to stand out in the real world more?
Yeah.
Like how can you invest in like physical things, physical gatherings, physical direct connections, And biggest thing I ever learned from Valhalla is like the value of consistency.
Yeah.
How valuable would you say consistency is in the world of storytelling, marketing, just
everything for me? Yeah. I mean, we were chatting about it before I got on. The consistency is becoming that word of the year, or the word that I want to continue to put effort into, is from building impact. The main edge that I have is having ideas of how I want to push things forward, but not taking time to work on the business versus in the business, or prioritizing things, or keeping very sacred blocks of time that's going to consistently be my sales outreach, or to build my SOPs, to build my processes, to look at financial models with it. And I'm trying to set that bar to success so low so I can scale up with time. Like, I just want to get those, I want to get that consistency underneath my belt with the business on working for 30 minutes or an hour a week on like this one process. Mm-hmm. Otherwise I'm going to wait until, you know, 6 weeks from now and then try to go all in for it, spend a day on it, and then close the books for it, and then continue just working on client fulfillment for the rest of the time. So really carving out that time, even if it's small wins, like I just want that muscle to be so strong. And I feel like that's the path forward for impact specifically, and the areas of the business that I know need to improve. So, and that's also even with my day-to-day life, is like building better healthy habits, because as the business is growing, and as I'm like, and I think there's a trend going out there in the world right now, is like pulling back from dopamine, pulling back from indulging. Like, this is the new trend going on. I feel
like
spreading
less hedonist.
Exactly.
Like zigging against the zag of hedonism.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, even thinking about that from my perspective, and like what I want to achieve, and also like just where I want my mental state and physical state to be, like I need to have consistency in working out and drinking X amount of water a day, and you know, getting the right foods in my body. And just like, as I've leaned down that path more and more and built little consistency and sprints of that, and then going back to more sporadic habits in my health or in the business, it just makes it even that much more sensitive. So I'm kind of going deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole, where the pain becomes more and more clear that certain habits and sporadic ways, and maybe it's because I'm growing and getting older as well, I'm more sensitive to things. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I'm really looking myself in the mirror this year and trying to figure out how I can build that consistency and what's really going to allow me to operate and make me feel the best. Consistently feel good, mm-hmm. not like a super high of a crazy night out or anything and then feeling like, you know, shit the next couple of days. Like, yeah. I really want to tune that in and find that balance and in all areas of my life. So consistency is a big thing for me right now.
Well, you used another word earlier that was compounding.
Yeah, I've been using that one a lot.
Talk to me about what that means to you and what that looks like in the world of business.
Yeah. I mean, it's pulled from an investment term as well. So mm-hmm. reading Tony Robbins' books and, you know, feeling about his like compounding interest and compounding effect.
Which book? With the Money Master of the Game.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I just started listening to the beginning of the audiobook. I never finished it, but I did pull that piece away from it.
Yeah. The game is about compounding interest.
Yeah, exactly. So I think like consistency creates the compounding effect, which that is, you know, bigger steps and greater steps over the long period of time. So seeing in a year seems like, I'm saying a year as like the distance of it seems like such a far thing, but it'll sneak up on you quick. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's hard to fully commit to a year in our day-to-day world, or maybe it's always been like that, but it seems like it's harder for people to commit for a year, 3 years, 5 years to something. So if I can build that compounding effect of doing something small every single day, I know that it's going to have the biggest impact for myself. You see it all the time, like habits build everything. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's what I'm looking to create with consistency, is a compounding effect, and whatever I'm trying to put effort into, whether it's like financials and, you know, setting myself up with certain investments, or health and working out, mindfulness, whatever it is. I try not to also put too much weight on multiple things at once, but like clearly focusing on something at a time. Like right now I'm on day like 40 something of a gallon of water every single day. And I just want to build that habit. And so that's something I'm focused on this right
well, I think
now.
I think the thing that comes with that is you're building the identity as the person who does that thing.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, I was having a conversation with a with a personal trainer. His name's Charo, who I did a 100-day challenge mm-hmm. with, actually. And I'm on day, I think, 93 or 94 of doing Duolingo, where I'm learning Spanish at the moment. And like the value of like 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day mm-hmm. to your ability to learn a language or your ability to be fit or your ability to build like actual association between what somebody would think of you just based on the fact that they might not know anything about you, but if they are exposed to your stories long enough, your Instagram stories, your Reels, your TikTok, whatever, YouTube, all of those things, they're going to create an association that you are an expert in something mm-hmm. or that you, maybe expert's a big word in certain cases, but you are like passionate or particularly interested in a particular topic. And if you could just like own that over and over and over and over again, that is like, to me, I call that like, that's where your story is formed. Like your brand is based on not the story you told that one time in that perfect video, but more so the story that you're able to tell like every time over and over and over again, time after time again, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm curious about your experience in sometimes, you know, this happens a lot in marketing. People approach us and are like, okay, we need like the perfect thing.
Yeah.
Like we need the ultimate funnel with the ultimate thing. And you kind of said something earlier about failing forward, mm-hmm. letting the data inform
yeah.
the mission. Can you expand on that? What, like, what would that look like today? In let's say I'm working with Impact or I'm working with you. How would you go about that?
Yeah, in business, call like the MVP products, the minimal viable product mm-hmm. that you need to start testing and learning about something. So if it's for a video, it could be creating a short UGC style video, keeping the production value super low and just testing, is this a compelling thing? Is it going to get a bit more views on TikTok versus this one? Mm-hmm. It could be creating a super simple landing page and testing out a headline. What's going to click on, one engaging title or value proposition versus another? It could be a certain type of content of creating five each at a lower scale before investing in doing a larger campaign with it. So it's basically finding the least friction to test an idea and get viable data to then make a more informed decision or build upon that as you grow forward. So understanding what that KPI of what success looks like and what you're looking to identify and what's the... Yeah, where can you find the least friction to test that out and to start learning and also to start getting like little wins as well. Can get burnt out before you even launch something where
I've seen it happen 1,000 times.
Yeah.
So victim of it myself. Many
yeah,
times.
Perfectionist. Yeah. Is many typically can happen. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, basically it's that. It's finding the path of least resistance and friction to test ideas and to make informed decisions from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in our world of marketing, storytelling, a lot of people tend to value the high production. They tend to like overvalue the high production and the like quality, quote unquote, of the content while undervaluing momentum.
Yeah.
And undervaluing like the consistency of like a story told on an iPhone but told every day goes so much further than like that one big Super Bowl ad kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And it's just like getting super honest with what that's going to do with it. Is some people think that the most motivational speech on Facebook is going to lead them to millions and millions in revenue because it gets X amount of views. It's like, great, it might build your brand with it and then you can retarget them with ads later or build off of that. But that one, you know, one hit of a Super Bowl ad might not be the thing that generates all the money for you. You have to really continue to build that with time, which is, you know, it's fine to do super high production brand building things. And, you know, you've built many yourself and just being honest with yourself, like, what is that going to create? It might not be the most viral video, but when someone comes to your website and they see a super polished thing and you're selling high services, you don't care if it's got 100 views, 1,000 views, 10,000 views. If it's like the right 1,000 people are looking at that, then that can make you millions and millions of dollars versus having something that goes out in a different place and has millions of views, but it doesn't really convert or speak to the audience that's going to get X results. So mm-hmm. yeah, there's different aspects to it. And some of our most viral videos, I was talking about this earlier today in an earlier meeting, is our most viral video that we produce with Impact I think we had three pictures of the product. Didn't even have the product. We had three stills of a product, and we had the founders, and like I had a picture taken of them in a movie theater, and then we used B-roll and just compelling text over video storytelling to create this video, and it has over 100 million views on it, and is one of their most profitable ads. And it was just a simple text over video, and they've done, you know, they've done other stuff that helped, that's competed with it, but that production for the video was a lot less.
I mean, it's fascinating how many times the thing that I thought would be like the thing that would work the best performed the poorest. And then it's amazing how many times there was like throwaway ideas that were like, oh wait, that like raised $1 million on Kickstarter. Like what, what just happened there? You know what I mean? Like there's so many versions of that have played out. I think I've learned the one thing I've kind of learned, a lot about lately, is I spend an enormous amount of time trying to like seed culture rather, and then trying to like be at the edge of that. So I think about like, an example, we were running Superhero Academy, but the old name of this podcast, we were running Superhero Academy together. Garrett and I really built it, that whole brand together from start to finish. And the idea, behind it, at one point we were doing a webinar called Rise of the Philanthropreneur. And I was adamant about like the word philanthropreneur is like it's a future word. Like it's a word that I want to own and I want to be like deeply associated to, because I believe that that word will have more and more impact as we go forward. And I honestly, today, it's still 5 to 10 years down the line in my opinion. But I was like, no, I can make it happen. Like I can like create the wave and surf the wave, right? And yet, if you had hired me as a consultant, I'd be like, no, you're an idiot. No. Find the existing wave and just ride that wave.
Yeah.
And then realize that like you could invest some amount of money
and
some amount of time and energy into like making a moat around particular terms, words, ideas, concepts, like the word philanthropeneur as an example. But the reality is that most people who are consuming content are in a different state, and they're just like, they're actually looking to satisfy the most basic of human needs sometimes. Like they're just like wanting to feel connected, or they just like curious about a particular topic or idea, or they're like, oh, I was looking for a better laundry detergent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or a better way of doing the thing that I'm already doing.
Yeah.
And so rather than trying to shift everyone's entire life perspective, if you could just like improve their life a tiny little bit, you can just be like, be the better mousetrap of sorts sometimes in terms of product or service, then that goes so much further than anything you're trying to like innovate. Innovation is way harder. Would you agree with that? Like what, like?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you have to make it a welcoming space, an unintimidating space for someone to walk through that door. And that's creating less friction in that degree, as well as letting somebody join or see themselves as a part of it, where the philanthropreneur can be intimidating because it's hard for somebody to see themselves in that or even understand it in the first place.
Exactly.
So I think it's definitely much easier, and I don't think we're not as complicated, but also complicated human beings. Like if you look at the needs and like our desires, wants, needs, like these psychological triggers and desires and hierarchies that are built into us are super clear, and they don't need to be revolutionized all the time. So it's how do you understand that and then clearly speak to that and invite people into a least frictionless process to be a part of your business, movement, group, culture. And that's every step of the process too. Even the farm, I'm kind of curious, even your evolution of how you make it less frictionless for people to even join or show up. It's a big thing. Holding events, I'm sure helps, welcome people as opposed to showing up by themselves on a Saturday. So there's always that process, and we're so deep in the weeds of running the business and the thing in our mindsets that, we forget to kind of step back and like, okay, how do I remove all of my thoughts on this, preferences on this, opinions on this, and look at it with a clear head of what's the easy steps or what's the easy ways to make this a welcoming thing, understandable thing for people to get involved, so I can support people and grow whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess to answer the question of like, how is it that I get people at the farm to kind of step in and understand the community, join the community, participate in the community. But also, I think the first challenge is actually truly change their mindset mm-hmm. that somehow they've walked into my community mm-hmm. so much as I constantly am refining the word that they'll say, like, your farm. I'm like, no, our farm. Mm-hmm. I think it's in that exact thing. Like, it's a removing the why out of your and putting the just the keeping the hour component out of that. Because mm-hmm. that's the fundamental element of what the farm is doing. My thought process is that the farm is an incubator for entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And if I've been successful at anything in my career, it's that I'm capable of understanding the talents that other people have well before they even understand the talents. And then just constantly nursing that. Like, how can I just, like, make the conditions as simple and easy as possible and then take sometimes their scope, which is like, I want to be this, I don't want that, I want to do it here, I want to live everywhere in the world, and then bring it back to, like, just this one, like, okay, let's get really fucking good. I'm doing this with Leo. Let's get really fucking good at making video podcasts. Mm-hmm. Like, just be world-class at that. And if we do that right, everything else is going to come.
Yeah.
You know? And so I try and encourage people's ideas, and the way I see it is, like, I'm farming, you know, garlic and making honey and a bunch of other stuff we're doing at the farm, but the number one thing that I'm constantly doing, and I told you this many times, mm-hmm. When it comes to marketing, is I'm hunting for talent. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly farming talent. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly, like, shaping and trying to, like, not, and there's like a moral element to this where it's like, how much do you shape, but then how much do you, like, step back and say, actually, okay, I think now it's got a mind of its own. Like, it's like, at what point do I, like, stop you and be like, okay, Garrett, I don't think you're doing the right thing, or maybe nah. And then at what point am I like, you know what, now at this point, Garrett's going to be the tree that he's going to be. You know what I mean? That's still a question I sometimes have. But I've gotten really successful at doing that and removing the financial pressure of the startup mm-hmm. by giving them conditions that are literally almost overly generous. And why I say almost overly generous is not because I think I should be less generous. It's that if the conditions aren't, if there's not enough pressure, they won't grow.
Yeah.
So there has to be a little, like I'll give the example back to plants. If you grow a tomato plant in a greenhouse, but you never do what is called hardening them off, you never put them outside and have them deal with the real wind and the real cold and the real rain, they're actually a weaker plant than if they actually dealt. Like, they can grow in the perfect environment of the greenhouse, but they also have to go out into the real world and deal with, like, the brutality of what comes with the real world at times. And I think that's where I've gotten better at that.
Talking about the hero's journey of a tomato plant. I love it. Yeah. Leaving it. Leaving the garden center.
Yeah.
Oh, I leave in the bed of my truck, let it just hit the wind on the way back home. Get it real toughed up.
I mean, I think it's a real thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a real thing. I mean, it's definitely a real concept in the world of farming, but I also think it's the same is true of entrepreneurship and of startup culture, is that sometimes the pressure cooker makes and breaks it. In many people's cases, most people's cases, it breaks it. But for those who do make it, that's, like, I'm all about that.
Yeah.
I'll plant the 100 seeds, and if only one survives, I'm stoked, because I'm still stoked that one thing fucking made it.
Yeah. You know? When people ask me for advice on their own entrepreneurial journey, or like, what did I do to get to where I'm at? And I'm not anywhere special with anything. I run an agency. I feel like I'm doing decently well. But when I get asked that question, it's always hard for me to give an honest answer, because there's not really an easy way for me to explain it or also encourage somebody to go through the trials and error that I have been through. It's like, do you really want to learn it? Like, it was years of getting by and trying certain things and, mm-hmm. You know, being in, like, uncomfortable growth situations without certain stabilities along entrepreneurship. Totally. So it's just interesting when I get that question, I always hesitate. I'm like, do I give the real answer to this? Because I don't know if I would encourage everybody to go through that journey of uncertainty. So it's interesting saying that. I don't really know when or how sometimes to encourage somebody to take that journey of entrepreneurship, or, like, what path makes the most sense for them when I look at my own side, I'm like, yeah, it was not easy at all times. There was a lot of uncertainty and things could have taken a left or right. I could have been successful or much less successful around any corner.
Absolutely.
But it's what you're speaking about.
Well, I mean, look, I'm in my 17th year of being an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and there are still moments like that for me.
Yeah.
There's still times where I'm like, I feel like I'm flat broke and I'm like, okay, wait a second. I spent all my money trying to like scale the farm or do this thing or do the other thing or like invest in this one like random part of storytelling that I'm just all of a sudden obsessed with and I'm trying to learn the parameters of. I don't know that you ever, I think you just get comfortable.
Exactly. Comfortable in the discomfort. Yeah. Comfortable yeah. in the discomfort yeah. and like being able to, you know, the first time we met or one of the first times, mm-hmm. One of the first conversations we ever had was, I'm figuring out just as much as you are. And that's been an evolving theme in our conversations
yep.
is you just get a lot better in becoming comfortable and uncomfortable conversations and a lot more trust in your ability to
meet the moment,
fly on the way down.
Yeah, exactly.
And mm-hmm. that's a big one. And it's still, I think you never stop growing from that process. But that's the biggest thing is just getting more comfortable with it.
I remind people this all the time. They're like, oh, but what about the answer to this? And they're like asking me stuff about the future of the farm and like where it's going to be in 5 years. And I'm like, guys, like, I'm sorry, but I don't know about you, but have you ever built a village in your life? I was like, I've never done this before either, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, I've learned a couple of things and I'm kind of effective at it now, and I say kind of because from my perspective I'm still got tons to learn, but when I look back or when I look at other people I'm like, okay, yeah, wow, okay, I've learned a thing or two.
Yeah.
But I just get back to, and what I'm like, my word for the year is like infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you say it subtly, and I think it goes over people's heads when you're talking about like working on the business versus in the business.
Yeah.
Or standardizing practices, and you use the word SOPs, right? Which is basically that. It's that. Like mm-hmm. it's the investment in those little details that make the compounding conditions happen. Like last year, the investment, a large portion of the investment of the farm was on the north side. I call the north field. And Olivier, who's a, you know, one of the members of our farm and the core asset of the farm and just an amazing human, I call him the King of the North, very Game of Thrones reference, but he really is the King of the North. And but I put an enormous amount of energy in road, water, power. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, if this is a game of Age of Empires, we need these basic things. Like we need to get the basic infrastructure. And if I put that basic infrastructure in place and I invest in that, everything else is going to grow. And like, if I look at it this year, I'm like, wow, this place is literally transforming without me doing anything.
Yeah.
Like it's truly remarkable. The second you give the basics of opportunity and the basics of an ecosystem to come to life, everyone explodes into that opportunity. And half of being an entrepreneur is getting out of your own fucking way.
Yeah.
It's just like most of what I try and do at the farm now is just be like, okay, so I have this kind of idea. What do you think? And then they'll say something, and sometimes it's horrible, and sometimes it's like there's a little piece of genius in there, and sometimes it's like way better than what I thought. And when it's better than what I thought, I make the decision to go the direction that was better. And when it's horrible, I take it with a grain of salt, and I'm like, okay, you know what? Maybe I did have the right idea. But the process of consulting people inherently is part of where the success comes from. It's not even about what they say or what I decide. It's about the fact that I'm doing it with them. And do they truly believe that I'm doing it for them too?
Yeah.
You know, and I would imagine that, you know, many of the people who you work with Impact, I know, some of which are your own family, your brother and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. but others are even here in Montreal who we met over the years together. And most of that success that you're going to have building a team or building and scaling a brand or scaling an agency or scaling a business is going to be about like who you're doing it with.
Of course.
And you know, so my advice to somebody, when it comes to starting an entrepreneurial journey is saying everything you think is going to take, it's going to take way longer. Realize that everyone is inventing it, and And I always say it's all about who has walked the path before you. Can you find a real mentor? And I still believe this fully. And then who's walking the path with you right now? And can you truly walk with them? And if they're falling behind, don't leave them behind. And if they're ahead, they'll do the same for you.
Yeah.
And it's just walking that path, realizing you're on like a, you're on a journey together. And it's almost like you're Vikings leaving the shores of Europe to try and find the, you know, the, this a lost land that, that they believe is somewhere west. And if you row together and you work together and you stay together in that way, you, you will make it. Yeah. Not everyone will, but you're way more likely to make it.
Mm-hmm. Makes me think of, I forgot which martial arts it is, but the practice of like a third of your time should be spent with a mentor learning, a third mm-hmm. of your time should be spent in the trenches with somebody who's at your skill level, mm-hmm. and a third of the time is training somebody.
Yeah.
So seeing each component of it, and at the start of a journey, you're much more likely to be with more of a mentor level and then find some people along your way in your tribe, and then you get to then pass it down. And I think that's when you really solidify the lessons.
Yes.
And you might be able to do something extremely well. True mastery is to then be able to teach it and create the foundations, the processes, the environment, the compost for these things to
the future,
these to grow. And that's when I think you truly understand it. And I don't have that like all the time. And a lot of the times so I'm still figuring that out, and it's fun to aim in that direction and
be conscious
of that. Yeah. And be conscious
sometimes
of that.
Sometimes it's like super shitty, right? Like sometimes you thought you were super clear.
Yeah.
You're like, how did you not like, it was so odd, like, you know what I mean? Like, and then I'm like, oh, and I had this like moment literally the other day with Gloriana. It's like, I'm like, oh yeah, you're new to this. Mm-hmm. And I forgot that. Like, and I wasn't like as compassionate about that. And like, that sucks. Like it sucks because then I can't take back how I felt and like the emotional reactions sometimes I have, but I forget what it's like to be at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I truly have lost sight of the initial shore. Like I sailed west many, many years ago to the point where I don't even know what west and east is anymore. You know yeah. what I mean? Like I've circumnavigated the globe, it feels, multiple times. And so but I've lost sight of like why, and even the feeling and the nervousness and the maybe the lack of clarity that comes with being at the beginning of the journey, but also the lack of clarity because and this is the one thing that, for me is a little bit of a weakness sometimes, is I've never really had a normal job.
Yeah.
So I've never understood taking orders from other people and how ingrained people are and like just needing somebody to be like, please do this and this and this, and like needing a checklist of things. And I'm more of like you went through this. I'm like, yeah, there's the deep end over there. And like, I throw you in and I'm like, you got it, Garrett. And I run away. You know what I mean? But I always had like, I was always there to bail you out if you needed it. And yeah, I think that's the true sign of like a good mentor for me, but that's not necessarily the best mentor for everyone.
What do you feel like what area of life are you actively in that student level? I feel like you're a constant learner in your life and a student sure. to certain things. So what are you currently focused on that you're a newbie or a rookie in, and how important, if important at all, do you feel like that is to continue with that empathy and compassion for somebody who isn't a different, maybe it's completely disconnected, but I'm kind of curious where you're at.
Two things. One, very basic levels of just Spanish languages. I like deeply admire my brother's capacity to have become a polyglot. And I think he speaks, I wouldn't say totally fluently all seven languages that he speaks, wow. but he speaks seven languages and four for sure, very fluently. Five, I would say proficient. And then maybe the another two where he's kind of touch and go on Arabic and Russian, but there's language is one thing, but I would say that I'm in the current phase of humbling myself, understanding that I'm a phenomenal community builder, but I'm not necessarily the greatest go to market farmer. So I believe I have to eat a lot of humble pie when it comes to my ability to take an expiring product and bring it to market. And what I mean by that is like the second you take the lettuce and you chop it, it is dying very quickly. And we kind of live that through the algorithms right? It's like, okay, you press publish on a piece of content, it's got 48 hours. It's got 48 hours of life before it's completely dead in the water, for the most part, right? Like, some things do make it past that, and there are anomalies. But the for the most part, you have 48 hours, and you just have to get it going. And we built an entire ass-backwards discovery of a career when we took one piece of content and then shared it across multiple pages, and it was like, oh, shit. That was so freaking powerful that I took that one thing and then spread it across the entire universe of the internet at the time, or at least what it felt like, the entire universe of the internet at the time, and then was able to engineer virality in a way, or I don't want to say virality, but engineer a minimum effective dose of reach that gave it the best chance of having wings that can fly. It's like I had a paper plane, but I was throwing it off the top of a cliff rather than at the bottom of a valley. That's the best way to describe it for me. And hoping that it would go as far as possible. But the idea for me is that the go-to-market and the challenge and the delicacy of what it takes to grow food and mass production and also mass... and this is where I'm slightly different. I love novel. So I love plants like somebody would collect Pokemon. Right? But most people are like, no, I just want the carrot to look like the carrot that I buy at the grocery store. Or I just like want the normal tomato that's like the one that my grandmother buys and my mom buys and I buy. And I'm like, ooh, that like pushes against my personal nature. But for the sake of running a farm-based business, even though that is not necessarily my highest excitement to make money selling tomatoes, I think that's a growth edge for me. Like, mm-hmm. and I say tomatoes is not necessarily the personal thing that I'm going to grow, but I'm very focused on garlic. I'm very focused on certain things. And then when I hang out with like amazing farmers, you know, I like, there's this one guy, his name is Dave, Farmer Dave. He runs something called Bio Sauvage, and he started a hot sauce line called Tarbanasco. He's moving to the farm. We sell his hot sauces. We work with him on a bunch of different stuff. You know, the other day he comes by and he planted a bunch of garlic at our farm as well. And he looks at the garlic and he's like, oh, it's missing nitrogen. And I was like, what? Like, what? Like, how? He's like, oh, you see the yellowing of the thing over there? Like, at this temperature, this time of day, this time of year, it shouldn't be like that. It's just missing nitrogen. And I was like, dude. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's some people who are so freaking geeky about, like, the pH of the water with the thing, with this compost and that thing. Like, there's an entire universe of stuff that I've touched on. And we've done so, like, I mean, we did the launching of Dr. Elaine Ingham's soil food web course, or, you know, help Vivian Calixilos with Ductair with a bunch of stuff. And still to this day, I still help people like that. But now I'm like finally giving myself enough space and time to like to go to that level. Like, okay, what about the pH of the water? Like, can we tweak it this way or that way? So I'm in like the chemistry side of farming now. Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it.
That's fun. Yeah. And I feel like in my 40s I'll be into bird watching. Like, I've kind of started thinking. I respect that appreciation for it, and I'm excited to like have those different phases of life where I can truly geek out on it. And as we were speaking about consistency earlier, it was making me think of like having one true lane of mastery, but also continuing to like build these different segments of interest and compounding effect, so that at the end of your life you're able to look back and, you know, not see a blank slate or something that really blinked by, but to be like, I know these multiple languages, or I went to these different countries, or I learned these different skill sets, and to kind of have this coloring book that you can look at and these different things you've experienced and build the mural you are at that point of your life. So
exactly. And I think it, like, there's always like the strategic side of my mind that, like, just like when I was learning, I don't know, Pinterest or Instagram, or how do we growth hack LinkedIn to get the message out there to make it more the most effective thing for Gary Vee or whoever the hell, you know what I mean? But like the reality is that I still have the mentality of like, oh, learning Spanish is a force multiplier for me. Meaning, like, if I learn how to speak Spanish, the number one group of people, and this is not a stereotype, this is just the literal statistical reality of America at this moment, North America, is there's an enormous amount of people who work on farms that are coming from Mexico or Venezuela or from Latin America in general. And I want to relate with those people. Like, I want to, like, if we're going to scale the farm to have a lot of support, we're going to need help. Mm-hmm. And we're going to need help from people who work way harder than the fucking white people. And I'm not to hate fucking white people. I'm one of them. But the idea of just like, when you grew up in the suburbs and you went to the grocery store to get everything you ever wanted all the time on command, or forget even going to the grocery store. Now you can order it on Prime and it comes to your door within hours. You don't have the same capacity to value what it is to actually understand the sweat, blood, and tears that goes into making this stuff happen. And I personally love the mentality of outside of North America in general. I love European mentality. I love Central or South American mentality significantly more than I like actually North American culture. And so the best way for me to relate to that is actually like deeply understand their language and understand that like their language actually impacts what they care about. Like the way people emphasize certain words or certain things literally speaks to the values of their culture. So yeah, I can like talk about like, oh, it's strategically a good move that the guy who's running a farm would understand Spanish, because then I can hire more people who can help us at a lower cost labor. And then there's a like actual, the real reason for me is like, well, I'm dating somebody who's Venezuelan and I would love to just like be able to understand her language. Two, I realize that there's crises in the world, like in places like Venezuela, that people are like literally having to flee their country just because of, you know, poor management at the top of the food chain, and partially because they also just like stood up to the IMF and to global politics in a way that kind of destroyed them. So my biggest thing is like, oh, can I hire people to like have the best job ever? Like, can I like, rather than bringing in a bunch of Mexicans and saying, how can I pay them the cheapest amount of money to get the best amount of maximum profit on the farm? I actually have none of that mentality. Like, the farm to me is not a profit-seeking center. It is about growing the best possible food for the most amount of people. And so when you're optimizing for a different KPI, as you kind of said, right? In my case, the KPI isn't sales. The KPI is the highest possible quality, the longest term thinking type mentality, the best possible conditions for the future of the farm, the soil, and everything in it. My goal is like, how can I hire these people at the most I can pay them? Mm-hmm. What's the most that I can pay them that makes sense for everyone involved, including the people who are existing partners of the farm, the existing farmers at the farm, as well as myself and the people who would come in and support that. And how can I learn from those people? Because there's an enormous amount I can learn from other people. So, yeah, there's that. And then, I'm in like the phase of like putting roots in different areas. So, you know, I feel like I've got a foot in Canada, I've got a foot in Vermont, I've got a foot in Italy now.
That's exciting. And
then, yeah, Italy. And then Costa Rica and Mexico are my the last two. Those are the five locations that I think I'm going to spend a lot of time in. Although Jason Silva definitely convinced me that Amsterdam is probably worth investing in as well. So now there's like a sixth one that's in my mind. And I know if I go to Colombia or Venezuela or any of these places, I'm going to be feel the same there. So I'm trying.
Yeah, your list got really quick, really.
yeah. But I'm trying to, but my goal is like, what can I bring? What's the unique value that I can bring to these places?
Language is a number one connector.
Language
as well.
Is a phenomenal way of going about that. If I'm going to invest in Mexico, Costa Rica, Colombia, I need to speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to like hire people to build the house. I want to build it with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been watching this guy, Sasha Julliard. He's a kind of Instagram influencer type thing, just a great creator, I would call him. And he's building these houses alongside a bunch of Ticos in Costa Rica. And I fucking love that. I was like, oh, dude, like that's such a dream. Like, I would love to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I'd love to like work physically building stuff.
Yeah. So, the culture and the celebrations and everything that comes with any culture that you visit.
Yeah.
It's great. And you can't truly embrace yourself in that until you know the language, which, you know, being in North America, Spanish is one of the most accessible regions and stuff for us. So being able to speak that, I'd love to speak Spanish at some point. We spend a lot of time in Costa Rica and want to continue to travel. And it definitely feels like there's a barrier that I can't speak Spanish fluently. So I'd love
it's tough.
I remember you said this, you were like, if I ever quit entrepreneurship, the path to least resistance becoming an invaluable person would be to learn Mandarin. And you were like, if I quit right now, I would learn Mandarin 100%. And then like would become like brokering deals and like become this massive connector and like seeing that value of
fastest path.
Yeah.
At that time specifically, it is the fastest path that you could probably take to just go from zero to hero as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And it's like, as difficult as that sounds, dedicate 1 to 3 years to it, you're fluent.
Yeah.
Like, do you just do it every day, 10 minutes, an hour, every day, you will be incredibly fluent in a new language, and at least fluent enough that the person would like see the effort and then would like genuinely feel the connection, and like they would, you'd be able to cross that cultural divide. And then inherently, that's exactly what many cultures want. Like, we just want to be seen and heard, right? Why the hell do we post on anything on social media other than to be seen and heard, right? Like, so I think the same is true in Chinese culture. I think the same is true in, you know, Latino culture or Latin-based language culture, European culture. Everyone has their own version of that. And I'm just, like, learning to celebrate all of those different things as much as I can. And then the other thing is, like, I'm, like, deeply just passionate, and I'm, like, most in awe of people who have just manual skills. Like, people who can, like, cut a piece of wood really nice or, like, install a fan properly with good electrical work. And, like, when they do a good job, I'm like, oh, man, it's like, one of those, like, oddly satisfying videos on YouTube.
It's such an awesome skill. I wish I was more handy in that way. I'd love to be more handy on a farm or carpentry or, you know, just anywhere around there. And, you know, speaking of something earlier, I think you were talking about me implementing. And I do love hard work with the events of it, of, like, just doing something. I feel like that's kind of my personality, just to move stuff around. I'd love to be able to translate that into more tangible trades and skills and stuff, because I find so much peace in just having a task and going at it.
Oh, sure. It is like the most horrifying and tantalizing, but also invigorating thing ever for me is like garlic. Mm-hmm. Like, garlic keeps me up at night. I swear, last night or the night before, I literally woke up in the middle of the night. I was like, okay, should I like put the baskets this way, and should I rotate them left to right or right to left? Is there a difference? Maybe I can stack the baskets this way, or maybe I'll put like the fan under this, or if I put the fan under pallet, and or should I do it top down? Like, I obsess about these little details, and there's only one way to do it. And then it's such a classic Mark move, which is like every year my goal is to just double. I'm like, can we double again? And so we went from like 2,000 to 4,000 or 5,000. Then we went from 5,000 to 10,000. We went from 10,000 to 20,000, 20,000 to 40, and now 40 to 80.
That's where you're at now?
We're currently at 80.
Wow. Those you're able to harvest those twice a year, or is that just once a year?
Well, we have to do the garlic flower harvest, which is like now, next week kind of thing, June. And then garlic harvest is in July, and then the planting is in October. Here in Quebec and in Montreal. So that's, but that at 80,000, it's insane. And so then it challenges every part of me, because it's like, okay, I have to put on a really good event to attract a lot of people. But to do that, I have to like bring in the best artists and DJs and like fire spinners and do something that's amazing. So then, okay, well, great, let's do that. Then I have to have the right equipment. And I was like, well, what's the right equipment? Where do I source this equipment? And unlike anything else, like everything else in my life, it's like, oh, I need a new laptop. Bang, I know exactly where to find it. But I'm like, right now I'm looking for bread baskets because they stack well and like they have like the perfect holes and they have like a big surface area. And I'm like, where the fuck do I buy bread baskets? So I Jerv went to Costco, or Seb went to Costco, and he was like, oh, they have a bunch of them at Costco. And I'm like, do you think we could just like go and ask them if they would sell it to us? Like, so now the game is like totally different that I'm playing. And it's physically challenging, because like back to social media, I can have a supposition or an idea, an MVP, and that MVP is like it's one post, one headline, one click funnel away from me being able to test it. So you can go from like idea to launch within a very short time span. And, you know, most launches do take between 3 and 6 months, let's say, right? But if you're properly doing the full thing. That being said, for me to launch a new garlic season, it's a year. It's an entire year to just try it all over again. And if I mess up, messing up could be like devastation. And we're close. Like the other day, the last year, we broke apart the garlic bulbs into the cloves like a week or two before we were going to plant them. And then we kept them in these bins. And then all of a sudden, like, parts of the bins were getting moldy. And I was like, oh, fuck. So I start fanning them all out and putting them out. I'm like, so. And then this year, we had to have a conversation. Like, okay, we're not doing that. We are breaking apart the bulbs or into the individual cloves the day we're planting them. And then we have to fan the whole thing. We have to scale. So going from, like, my goal this year is to double the garlic. Now, there's a piece of me that's like, okay, maybe I won't double, but I add like another 40,000, go to from 80 to 120. I think we can definitely do that, but I'm not against potentially trying to double. So I have to bring my A game to try and figure out how am I going to motivate an army full of people to make this happen.
Need a flag, Garlic Fest 2023.
That's exactly. You literally nailed it. You need the flag. That's exactly right. So I hired somebody who I knows like the best DJs in Montreal. And I'm like, okay, you're running the entire event. Like we're bringing a best DJ. You're bringing fire spinners. We're bringing artists of every type and kind. Like you're making a mini festival for a day, and it's going to be Halloween. Like our Halloween party has to be the fucking party for planting. And then we need something similar for harvest. And I'm like, help me, you know? And then I just need to figure out. And I woke up 5 a.m. and I sent a message to Olivier. I'm like, okay, let's buy 200 baskets. Here's this person I found on Marketplace. That will be a backup plan. Let's still look for the bread baskets over here. I'm calling Seb like, hey, did you find anything about Costco bread baskets? Like, I'm like constantly doing the physical thing that is way harder to do. And even when you make the deal, you're like, okay, I found the baskets. Everything. Now you have to pick up 200 baskets that stack, but like they don't stack to infinity. So you need a truck, and then you need a trailer, and then you need the wraps and the whole thing. Like there's so many moving parts to this that are so much harder than anything I've ever done online. So, you know, I think the best thing I ever did was become a farmer, in my opinion. Like it changed my entire perception of what being a working class human entails and how much more talent there is in that and how much we like take all of that for granted. Because we walk in a room, we flick on the light and it works. And we just like so much of our world is built that we just complain consistently. Oh my God, they're always building construction in the streets. And Montreal is famously horrible for that. But like the fact that they even know how to build any of this stuff is an absolute blessing. Like, you know what I mean? It was like, you know, I complain about a plane being an hour late or like the Wi-Fi not working in the plane. And then every once in a while, I bring myself back to like, man, I would have killed for any amount of Wi-Fi back in the day. So if it's down for 30 minutes and a 4-hour plane ride, I think I can deal with it. You know what I mean? Just having reverence for the people who built this world, quite literally.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. I like to let my mind go there sometimes. This is crazy. We're flying in a bird right now. try to feel that gratitude, or just be like, man, this is nuts. What's going on around us?
So where do you think you are? I mean, beyond bird watching in Costa Rica, where do you think you're going? Like, do you feel like you've put a little bit of thought and energy into like a 5, 10, 25 year timeline at this point?
I'd say so. I'd say more like short term plus long term. There's definitely some short term goals that I want to achieve and implement. And I think running the business where the business is at today, I need to take more steps back to look at that 5-year mark. And I'm looking more of like a 1 to 3 year aspect of it with where I want to get the business. And there's certain goals there. And there's also certain personal life goals that I want to achieve over the next 3 to 5 years that I'm seeing some different shifts and like changes in the evolution of where I want to be in terms of specifically, I think the habits aspect of it. Like I want to shift out of certain habits of going out or consuming alcohol on a continual basis. I want to work out more. I want to feel better. I want to have my physical health. So I think I'm looking to consciously change myself as a character and the interest in it. So being very mindful of like first things first is, what do I do on a continual basis as habits? It doesn't have to be this like complete shift, or like the shift comes from the habits with it. And that becomes your identity, as you were mentioning earlier. So I'd say right now I'm mostly focused on habits. And then in the next 10, 20 years, I do want to continually have roots in Appalachia and continue to build community there, continue to have land there, have connections there, build from that standpoint, but also the flexibility to travel and spend 2 to 3 months on the road. Mm-hmm. In the past, I think I'd want to be on the road a bit more than I do now, but still I want to build a life where I can be out 2 to 3 months, which is still a great amount and totally. More than like, definitely grateful to be able to do that and would be able to do that in the grand scheme of things. And definitely want to continue to build relationships here in Montreal, and then likely down in Central America would be somewhere that I'd love to be able to continue to visit. And grow from that standpoint. I want to visit and see places across the world and spend a week or two here, but I'm also big when it comes to roots. So mm-hmm. I want to continue to invest in certain places, my time, my energy, my knowledge, my connections. And that's looking like Appalachia, Canada, and then Latin America. Also because there's the time zone aspect of it, from like working online and being able to do that in the first place. I never like fully take time off. So that's a realistic aspect to it as well.
I fully understand that. Yeah, I fully understand that.
So yeah, there's, but building businesses with it, there's different ideas, there's different, from a business front. I've hit, as I've been focused on 2023 and adding different habits and building consistencies and like cutting back on a lot of vices, being able to have more energy and space to wake up earlier, to feel good, to like not have any cloudy days or wasted days. It's definitely been re-sparking a lot of entrepreneurial ideas and like, man, I just saw something interesting at a thrift shop. Like, what would it be if I open up an eBay account? And like, that's not where I need it. That's not the best use of my time with it. But it's just like fun to start researching and love the art of growing stuff, selling stuff, branding stuff, creating stuff, just for fun, as a mental practice, as somebody whose tendency like leans to be more
sharp.
Yeah, more entrepreneurial and look at the world of that place and how it can use that for a way for growth or to achieve certain goals. And then also just like it's really been a big personal focus for me as well. Like I feel very fortunate with where the business is and where it's continuing to go. And now I'm starting to put more effort into personal habits, into my relationship, and just building things super, super healthy and with a long-term mindset.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, beautiful, man. Well, I'm excited for your journey forward. I'm always a supporter of all the things that you create and do. And, you know, I think as much as you've learned from me, I think I've learned from you. You know, I think you said it earlier and it resonates. It's deeply true. Is like the ultimate layer of mastery is being able to teach it. And then the next thing is to realize like, oh, while I'm teaching it, I'm learning that lesson. I'm like anchoring in that lesson into my body. Like it almost becomes a somatic thing where it's like, you know, you said earlier, it's like, I'm inventing it just as much as you are. I learned that through telling you that, but then having you reflect that back to me. So there's this constant, like there's this constant dance. And I think if we maintain our hunger, while also taking the time to smell the roses, or in your case, watch the birds, then we get to, I think we'll continue to find that value that will, everything will just work out in the most beautiful way. If we're consistent, if we're constantly compounding, if we're working on the business, not just in the business, it's like the basic things that sound so boring and don't necessarily make the best TikTok videos, but are the truth. They are the best way forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, appreciate everything. Appreciate the continual dance and the relationship of learning together, being friends, and leaning more into that uncomfort aspect of growing and learning the process, loving the process, and being mindful of the process to try not to let stuff slip by and make the best decisions that are going to help you evolve to be the person you want to be, and being clear on that, whatever that means to you. It's fun. It's a fun process, and it's a fun learning along the way with you.
Absolutely. All right, let's go get some boots in.
Let's do it.
Later, gentlemen and ladies and everyone else who's watching, hit the subscribe button. You know where you get it.